Thanks for coming out so early in the morning. I'm Andrew Morocco. I think my bio didn't load up quickly enough, but I appreciate the moderator's efforts. I'm at Lehman College, CUNY, in the CUNY School of Public Health. And I do health geographics, more or less, there. There's a lot of co-authors on this this study. I'm very fortunate to have many of them here, which is nice because otherwise there'd only be the three of you, I think. So Deb Biola, who's really the lead of the larger project, so it's very nice to have her here. In case there are questions at the end on a larger scale than what I'm going to present, she'll be able to field some of those. So she's at the Westchester Medical Center and the Center for Regional Healthcare Innovation, as is Tao Doan, who is kind enough to give the beginning of this presentation, give us a little background. She's at the same center and is also a doctoral student at the New York Medical College. Shirley Yang, who is not here, is an MPH student at CUNY. And Megan Hubel, who is here, which is very nice, is an MPH student at Lehman College, CUNY, and also one of the first students in our public health GIS track, so you get a gold star for that, Megan. I have no relationships to disclose, but if you want to get a beer later, I can tell you all about them. So basically, this is the way the presentation is going to be outlined. The challenge and project background, which Tao is going to present. I'll talk a little about the Area Deprivation Index, how it's developed and how we're using it, and how we're making local metrics out of it to give it a little more geographic sensitivity. Correlate that to some health outcomes, see if it really works, and then talk about conclusions. And there's going to be a focus on future steps a little bit, because this is really a nascent project. It's still being developed. So most of these slides are hot off the presses, the first time they're being shown. And at the end of all these presentations, I think I really welcome any comments you may have that may improve the study as we go forward. All right, so Tao.
Hello, everybody. Thank you again for coming to see us today and be here with us such an early morning. My name is Tao Doan. I am a research analyst, community health and public policy at the Westchester Medical Center Health Network in Valhalla, New York. So this is our challenge. So it has been shown that neighborhood level characteristics can often influence health outcomes and contribute to health inequalities. In fact, according to the county health rankings model from the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute, environment, quality, and built environment are factors that can contribute to one's health outcomes. Studies have also proven a strong association between neighborhood deprivation, such as income deprivation, employment, living environment, pollution, crime, etc., and disability, like mobility, cognitive function, or high rates of chronic diseases and preterm births, increased risky health behaviors, and lead poisoning are some of the examples. So ideally, healthcare providers, but particularly primary care providers, should be in cognizant of a patient's neighborhood environment in order to provide the best treatment, inclusive of preventive care. However, this can be a challenge with respect to the ease of the access to the data, its interpretation, and then the operationalization of this neighborhood data. Currently in New York State, there is a great transformation process taken into place in the delivery of care to the Medicaid population. And this is because in 2014, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, approved New York State's demonstration Medicaid waiver request of over $7 billion on a new initiative called the New York State Delivery System Reform Incentive Payment Program, or DSRIP for short, for the next 5 years, from 2015 to 2020. So DSRIP is an incentive payment model that rewards providers for performance on these transformation projects to ultimately provide better care to our Medicaid members. Now, what's unique about DSRIP is that it consists of networks of providers traditionally practiced in silo, such as physician groups, clinics, hospitals, medical and behavioral health providers and community services. But through this group, they will have to work together to do a better healthcare delivery system, and again, ultimately to improve health for our Medicaid members. We call these networks Performing Provider Systems, or PPSs. And there are 25 PPSs in New York State, and in our region, the Mid-Hudson region, there are three of us. Our own PPS, the Westchester Medical Center PPS, and Montefiore Medical Center and Referral Health Center. So this map shows the 11 regions in New York State in different colors here. So you see the bottom there in bright yellow is New York City. Right above that is our valley, the Hudson Valley region. And so our PPS covers 8 counties, including Delaware, Ulster, Sullivan, Orange, Rockland, Dutchess, Putnam, and Westchester. So this RIBS and its goals and objectives were of the driving forces behind this project. So there are some challenges currently exist in our healthcare system that we have to address. As you know, people have complex needs, medical, psychosocial, socioeconomic, etc. In addition, traditional health services are not focused so much on the prevention of these of the exacerbations of chronic of the chronic conditions. And then there's often poor coordination between primary care and community-based services. On top of that, there's lack of collaboration among behavioral health, housing, community organizations, which can impact the delivery of care. So these challenges can lead to barriers to healthcare because community resources are not well coordinated, and primary care practices cannot easily identify and meet the complex needs of the more vulnerable or at-risk populations, such as those with behavioral health conditions or those living with disabilities. On the patient's consumer side, they also find it very difficult to coordinate and to navigate through the multiple service providers. So tying all of these elements together, one way for us to mitigate these challenges was to develop a tool. And we did that by examining the Area Deprivation Index, called ADI, and Dr. Andrew Morocco will certainly tell you more about that in detail. But ADI was originally developed by Gobosin and later updated by Kine et al. It is freely accessible online, it's downloadable, and the information is available for the entire U.S. So one application, this tool that we are developing, is again, start with our challenge. Primary care practitioners cannot easily identify and meet the complex needs of the more vulnerable or at-risk population. But then when we input the index or the ADI, ADI flag then becomes the part of the practice-based electronic health records. And then depending on the level of the index, the flag would then trigger additional patient or client communication with the practitioner as part of the social history. And then based on the information through that communication, the practitioner can then refer the patient to either a case manager or community-based services, or in many cases up with the disabled population for the caregiver involvement. And so that's the basic background of our study. And then Dr. Morocco can finish the rest of the presentation.
So as Thal was saying, this Area Deprivation Index is a really nice data, and it's freely available for the whole country at different levels of aggregation. Essentially, it's built off of these 17 census variables, which you can see here, which generally are in these different domains, education, income, housing, so forth and so on. Not too dissimilar from a lot of European indices of deprivation. And so it's very nice. There are some limitations which I want to point out now in terms of application to our particular study. First is that these weightings for the index were developed using 1990 census data. And the most recent data that we had available at the time when we did this was 2000. So it was 2000 data built off of 1990 weightings. So just keep that in mind as we move forward. Now the Wisconsin folks are updating it as we speak, so that'll probably be available pretty soon. So the national level ADI. It's been shown through a number of studies, especially Kynes, that it's a very strong association with health outcomes. In their study, they used rehospitalizations of Medicare patients with congestive heart failure, pneumonia, myocardial infarction. And they found that if they looked at the top 15th percentile or 85th percentile, whichever way you want to go with it, they found really strong associations between airway deprivation and these outcomes. And it's very nice. So here's a map of the U.S. showing zip codes, or really zip code tabulation areas. The darker reds are higher deprivation, lighter reds are lower deprivation, arranged in quintiles. If you stratify this, or if you dichotomize this based on their percentile ranking, you can see that, generally speaking, the center of the country has higher deprivation than some other areas. And there is a little bit of an urban-rural bias to it. Now, the challenge comes, if we want to deploy this in the lower Hudson Valley, how is that going to work based on these national-level data? So here's our eight counties that I was mentioning before. Just, there we go. So New York City's down here, there's the Bronx, there's my college, and that's the rest of our study area. You can see only two or three zip codes meet that criteria based on the national-level rankings. And so it's not super useful as it stands. To be used in this context, anyway. So our first idea how to get around this was to look at it regionally, to rescale this based on a smaller geography, in this case, our study area, which has a operational meaning to it for us. So this is, again, in quintiles. The darker reds are the higher deprivation. You can see a really bold regional trend, right, from lower deprivation in the south to higher in the north. And that reflects more or less levels of urbanity. The south is Westchester, very close to the city, and as we go up, it gets a bit more rural. Dichotomized, it looks like this. So again, this is the top 15%. And you can see it's really focused in the northern part of the study area alone. And we end up missing a lot of the places that we know just from working there and living around there that are high-needs communities. So the idea we had as people that are geographically sensitive is to look at this locally, to look at relative deprivation. There's been a lot of studies that suggested that relative deprivation, whichever variable you have to be looking at it, may be equally important to an absolute measure. So we did this by creating kind of a moving quantile window, looking at a specific zip code, measuring distances away from that zip code. We used three thresholds for this, 10, 20, and 30 kilometers, and essentially making a quantile rankings within those neighborhoods. And if the central zip code was in the top 85th percentile of its neighbors, then we flagged it. If not, it wasn't flagged. So a little example. Here's the zip code near my house, 10927. 10-kilometer buffer is created around it. All of those neighboring zip codes are selected and ranked based on percentiles. And if that central zip code is in the top bit, then it was flagged. And in this case, that zip code was high deprivation relative to its neighbors. So that was done for the entire study. And you can see right away, you don't see the same patterning as you did before. You don't see that broad regional trend. You see more local variation. And here's the dichotomized version. But what we got worried about is, what if we're missing some other important stuff from the regional or national levels that wouldn't appear in the local levels that might get suppressed, right? So we built a composite index, which is, to put simply, it's a combination of regional, national, and local deprivation flags in an inclusive way. So the Boolean logic would be a union. And so any zip code that was flagged in any of these levels was flagged at this composite level. And three composites were made, one for each local threshold that we identified. And ultimately, we're going to put some self-checks in here, because one danger of this, right, is that we end up flagging local zip codes which have relative deprivation that may be high, but their absolute level might be extremely low. So they could be a relatively well-to-do zip code amidst super well-to-do zip codes. We didn't see that, I don't think, in our study area, but that's something to be concerned about if we deploy this in other areas. So here is the composite, which, again, is just a synthesis of all the other flags. And you can see what's nice about it is that we have some of these areas that we know just anecdotally are high needs now are coming out, especially in lower Westchester and some areas around here. So the way that we tested this was we looked at New York State Department of Health data on hospitalizations from a system called Statewide Planning and Research Cooperative System, which provided us zip code aggregated hospitalization data. And we took some very broad categories, just to get an overall view of how these deprivation metrics relate to health outcomes. So we looked at total hospital admissions, mental disorders, circulatory system, and respiratory system. And these were 1999 to 2001 to stabilize the data a little bit. We did indirect age adjustment based on the state level data. And it's probably a little hard to see, but these are the rate maps. Top left is the total hospitalizations, bottom left is respiratory, top right circulatory, and bottom right mental health. And they all do look relatively similar, which is not unexpected, I suppose. The one that looks most different, to my eye anyway, is the mental health rate. You can see it's a little bit lower in the northern part of the study area. These are all quintile, just so you can compare them a little more easily. But they are all relatively similar. So the way we're trying to look at the strength of association between our health and our essentially exposure variables, being high deprivation, being exposure, is we did age-adjusted odds ratios for all of these different exposure metrics. So looking at the local deprivation alone at 10, 20, and 30 kilometers, regional, national, and then the composite indices, again, at 10, 20, and 30 kilometers. And for the most part, they all behave very similarly in terms of strength of association, where the total hospitalizations, respiratory, and circulatory all had the most dramatic odds ratios when we were looking at the composite index using the 10-kilometer local component. The only one that was a little bit different was mental health, which had the strongest association with just the local metric. But it did have a very strong one, an odds ratio of over 2 for the composite. Just as a word of caution, the confidence intervals presented here, I did it out of a sense of completion, but they should be taken with at least one grain of salt, if not a whole lot of salt, because these data are not really independent. So these confidence bands are much narrower than they are in reality, so don't take them too seriously at this point. So just more look at the numbers, if they're nice and big. So the exciting part for me, or one of the exciting parts for me, is, again, Megan Hubel is working on creating a Python script to automate this task. So at this point, we're in kind of a beta phase with it, and it's working within ArcGIS, which is the platform that we're using for the spatial analysis, where the user can input all these parameters as he or she sees fit. And for me, this is going to be very nice because we can increase our sensitivity analysis, make it much easier to do. Because all of you who use GIS probably know that it can be, even though intellectually a very simple exercise, in practice can take a long time and be fraught with peril. So Megan's tool is going to really help us get through that much, much cleaner. And once this tool is finalized, the idea is that we're going to distribute it freely to follow up with the nice people at Wisconsin are doing, distributing their data freely. So if people want to use this kind of tool, they'll be able to without much of a problem. So what can we say about all this stuff that we just presented? Firstly, that in a theoretical way, if we can include a simple, reliable indicator of deprivation based on an area, ecological deprivation, to PCPs, it should help in providing useful and appropriate treatment, including preventative care to the patient. And if we can dichotomize this with a simple flag, because we know that people that are providing care are already overwhelmed with a lot of stuff to do, if we can simplify it somehow, then and incorporate it into the electronic health record, it'll ease interpretation and operationalization of this kind of information. What we found more specifically from this is that the regional and local relative deprivation are probably important components to looking at deprivation, at least in our study area. And by definition, it's geographically sensitive, which I think is important. And finally, if we can create this free tool and disseminate it, again, it'll make it easier for people to implement this if they think it would be useful for where they're working. And the future steps bit. All right, so we're going to recreate the ADI or use the newly updated ADI once it becomes available that is more current and relevant data. The Python-based ADI tools can be finalized, tested on a variety of data sets, geographies, aggregation levels, and scales. And we're looking into the possibility of expanding this this tool to not have to function within a GIS, because there's lots of people, it's very sad, but lots of people that don't use GIS. So if we can do an online or a web-based application to produce these data, it would be even better and make it much more accessible. We would also like to add an element, if possible, that if there is an ADI flag that comes up, that it'll link them automatically to relevant local resources, which Thao's been putting together a lot of resources that generally aren't mapped, and certainly not mapped together. It's a labor of love for you, I know. And so if the flag comes up, hopefully it can connect people with those resources that might be relevant. And finally, we're going to do more nuanced statistical tests on this data to get a better idea if it's really working the way we imagine it is. And I guess the questions will be at the end, so just write them down. That's it.